were people, many people living over there because you can't see them for the trees. So we're very fortunate in that we've got the view of the trees, and of course we've got our own trees. We've never touched anything. It's still completely natural, and you can see that nobody else has left it natural. If you look out there, it's been all bulldozed with an inch of its life. But our bit's the natural sandstone.
And I can see on these, on your veranda, your timber veranda, you have these, some elevated, some not, pots of lilies, Aspidistra,
which is the most wonderful hardy plant you could ever have for a gardener who doesn't want a garden. It's fantastic, and everybody admires my plant stands, the milk crates.
Does that go back to your early years with your grandfather?
Oh, yes.
The dairy crates. I think half of Sydney's cannibalised those. But it's interesting, this is just an observation for the tape, and it's not really an interview, a question. It's my comment, which I don't normally make, but it's amazing. There are so many of them and so many pots. It's a lovely dark green atmosphere out there, which is much cooler.
Mm-hmm. And of course there's a deck out here, which is all covered with pots as well. Mm. I don't know if you've been out there.
I didn't come that way, no. But it was a delight coming down your path where there were moments to pause and stop.
It's just been gorgeous with the roses, but they've finished. Yes. I have a lot of old-fashioned roses growing through all the undergrowth there, and it's been just gorgeous. Smells wonderful too when it's all out.
Yes, and it smells different on this visit again. Shirley, amongst your career moves, you've also done cruises on ships.
Yes, well, that was part of my Woman's Day experience. We went on a Woman's Day cruise, and a huge number of Women's Day writers went on the cruise, and we gave talks to the passengers. And afterwards, the P&O people, the captain, was very keen on my talks. He was keen on gardening. Captain Dallas, that was of the Arcadia in those days. And he suggested that we do some more cruises. So P&O asked a couple of us to do some more cruises. And I did quite a number of cruises for them, talking about gardening. And they were quite popular and successful. So I did the Woman's Day cruises on my own.
What sort of things did you talk about on those in those lectures?
Well, I used to talk about, I would have some topics that were of interest, you know, seasonal things, whatever was going at the time that we were on the cruise. And I would also talk about the things we saw at the various ports. We'd go to tropical islands, and I'd talk about the, tell people about what we were seeing, and talk about the tropical plants, which of course most of them weren't familiar with, and I would also give ordinary talks and talk about ordinary gardening, and ask, and they could answer questions, so that was always very popular, and everybody always wanted to ask questions. So yes, it was good.
And you've done gardening tours as
well? I did gardening tours nearly every year to Europe for some years. We used to do 21 days mostly, and we'd take two busloads of people, and we'd go travelling around. And when I was doing the radio program, I'd go with Phil Haldeman, and Phil and his wife Joan would be on one bus, and I would be on the other bus with my daughter Katie or with my sister Judith. One of them would come with me. And we would be answering questions. Of course, Bill couldn't answer many gardening questions because he didn't know anything about it, but he used to talk about football and things and tell jokes. And so we'd change buses each day, so everybody got a fair crack of the whip, as it were, with answering questions.
How did you enjoy those trips? You enjoy them?
Oh, yes, of course. I always enjoy everything I do. I had a great time.
That's a very nice thing to say. Not everybody does enjoy everything they do.
Oh, that's a waste of space.
Did you have to organise the trips, or was that
done for you? No. I would talk to the people who were, to the company that was organising, the travel company, and say what I wanted and where I'd like to go and things like that, and then they would go ahead and organise. It's not just a simple, straightforward thing of saying, oh, I want to go to Sissinghurst and I want to go here and I want to go there. They then have to fit in where you're going with where the bus can go and where it can get to another garden on the same day and to the hotel where you can stay in the same day. So a person like me doesn't actually organise the day-to-day destinations of a trip, because it's really is a very professional business on its own, organising to go to gardens and go to be in easy reach of the hotel you have to go to afterwards and things like that. Always have the input of where I basically wanted to go. I mean, you'd never go to England without going to Sissinghurst.
Quite. And in fact, you mentioned Holly Kerr Forsyth. That's one of the interesting things about her garden. She speaks about the people and a lot of private gardens that she goes to as well.
Mm.
Have you done those sorts of tours too?
Oh, yes. And I've done them with Holly.
Have you?
Yes, around Australia, not overseas. I don't think I've been overseas with Holly. No, I think I've only been around Australia with Holly.
So you've done a lot of travelling in your work.
Done a huge amount of travelling, absolutely huge amount of travelling.
Mm. And this is after the children have...
had grown up a bit more. But I still had my mother and my aunts coming to stay if I had. And I had a very dear friend. One of the girls I became friends with at the Ride School of Horticulture, who would always come and stay here with the children if my mother or aunts couldn't make it. So I was very, very lucky in that way.
Did you enjoy that direct contact too with the people on your tours?
Oh, yes.
The endless questions?
Mm-hmm. I'm always happy to talk to people and answer questions.
You never tire of it?
No. It's always good. When you're talking about what you're interested in most in life, it's going to be enjoyable. You're not going to get tired of it.
You also, talking of Phil Haldeman, you also did the radio program for many years on 2UE.
Yes, I think for about 12 years. I did it with Phil Haldeman, and he was the straight guy, as it were, and I was the person that answered the questions. He couldn't answer questions, of course, and but he would keep the program moving along, get rid of people who wanted to talk too long, and in a nice way, mostly. sometimes he wasn't so nice. He used to gong them or dong them or something. It's just them down the toilet, I remember, a few times, with a sound effect, of course.
Your book, of course, Over the Fence, was published in the 10th anniversary of that programme.
That's right.
And you have a lovely way of talking about in the beginning, which we all know but forget, how you're in that soundproofed atmosphere, very pristine, away from the world atmosphere, and yet you're speaking to people all over the countryside.
Yes. But of course, you're only speaking to the one person. Mm. When you're talking on radio, you're not conscious all the time. I mean, sometimes you are. You have to be in the back of your mind, always conscious of the fact that there's several hundred thousand people listening to you. If you give someone some advice about something, like spraying their tomatoes or something, you have to always be conscious of the fact that it's not just that one person you're talking to, but other people who are listening who are going to go out and do that too.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not have the same problem, and it might not be the right thing to do. So you've got to be careful. There's tricks. There are all sorts of little tricks and traps in that radio talkback business.
Were there ever questions that stumped you?
No, I don't think so. Phil always said I answered all the questions, but I remember occasionally I'd say, well, I don't really know. I'm not sure. So I'll go home and look it up, and I'll talk about it tomorrow or next week, as we were on Saturday and Sunday. So sometimes if I wasn't sure of an answer, I wasn't too silly to say I didn't know. I would always be quite happy to say, I'm not sure about that, I'll check it up. Didn't happen very often.
Sorry, Shirley. So just thinking about working Friday, Saturday and Sunday, that's quite an imposition on your weekend time.
Oh, yes, to do that. And we started at 6, well, we started at 7, but we had to be there at 6:30. You have to be there half an hour before the program. So, you know, you're really giving up your weekend because you can't go out. Well, I didn't feel I could go out to parties and stay out till 1 o'clock in the morning and only have a few hours sleep, because you've got to have your wits about you. If you're answering people for 3 hours, and you can get through an awful lot of questions in 3 hours, and you can't stop and think on radio. They ask the question, you give the answer. There can't be room for hesitation. So you need to have a decent night's sleep before you go and do that sort of thing.
You mentioned when we met previously, you had a lovely phrase that you've something to the effect that you felt your brain had gone. Just see if I can find that.
Well, you do feel, after you've been answering questions on radio for 3 hours, you come home and you feel that your brain's been sucked out.
That was it.
Yes. Yes, really, you really feel that sucked out feeling. Mm.
Was the program called Over the Fence?
Yes.
And hence right. The name of the book.
Mm. We couldn't think of a name for it, though. We had to have a name for it. You see, originally it was Burke's Backyard. And all of a sudden, Don used to, when I first started to do it for Don, when he got too busy with television, he made me go in there and do it on Saturdays and he did it on Sundays. And then, of course, he didn't want to come in on a Sunday either, so we ended up with a Burkeless Backyard. So we couldn't keep on calling it Burke's Backyard. We had to think of another name. We were all sitting around trying to think of something. We couldn't think of anything. We had to do it in a hurry. All we could all think of was Over the Fence.
That sounds a very apt name. You no longer have a radio program?
No. And they've actually stopped doing it on... Jennifer took it over for a couple of years, but then they suddenly stopped doing it just recently.
Why was that?
Oh, a fellow that was running the place at the time decided he wasn't interested in gardening and he thought he'd just do something different. So everybody was very upset, and they got huge quantities of complaints and emails and phone calls and letters, thousands, but they took no notice.
But then, touching on that, Shirley, were your books, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I found 12 at the State Library. Perhaps there's more.
I don't think so. I think there'd probably be them all.
And one of which, of course, is your gardening yearbook.
Yes.
Which you first published in 1980. What prompted you to publish that?
I think we... I had a phone call from Angus and Robertson, and they asked me if I'd be willing to do it, and so interested in doing it, and I was. And so we worked on that, went through columns I'd written in the Herald, and wrote more bits and organised it the way it is now. You can see how it's written month by month with what's flowering and what to do and what to plant and all that sort of thing. Actually, it's just going to be redone. I've got to rewrite the whole thing, so...
Goodness. Are you doing that?
Jennifer's supposed to be going to help me.
So what edition is that?
I'm not too sure. But it'll be a completely new edition. Everything, all the writing in it will probably be different, because there's no much point just rehashing what you've had out for 10 or 15 years.
Are you pleased with that book?
Oh yes, I think it's a very nice book. And I like my drawings, I like my photographs in it. I think they're very, they look attractive in it. And I've been reading through it myself just yesterday because of the proposal to redo the book. And I think it holds up fairly well. Found it quite interesting.
I'm thinking as you say that, Shirley, it's not common for people to be so pleased with their work. How do you feel looking back on your body of work, your writing, your radio programs?
Well, I think because I think I'm different from most of the people who've written about gardening in the past, certainly, whereas they weren't writers and they weren't horticulturists mostly. They were just people who were keen on gardening and and they wrote about gardens, but they didn't have actually professional knowledge or professional qualifications as being able to write. Whereas I think I've been very fortunate in that I was a writer before I started to write about gardens, and I've also got the proper qualifications from doing the RIDE course, apart from my lifetime in the garden, where you get a huge amount of knowledge.
Your writing's quite concise, and you convey a lot of information very quickly, it seems to me, to someone who may not know a great deal about the subject. Is that a skill that you've had to hone?
I think that that's a journalistic skill. I think if you're a journalist, you learn to write concisely, and I hope that that's what I do. I don't try not to waste time on purple prose.
Is there one book that is a favourite for you?
Oh, yes, I think The Gardening Year is the one I really like the best. Mm.
You mentioned when we met previously, because of your work on radio, that people would recognise your voice in public places.
Yes.
Does that still happen?
Well, I don't go out very much at the moment because I haven't been 100%. And as you can tell, my speech has been affected by the problem I've had. So I don't think that I would have that problem today. Mm-hmm. But up until I got sick a few months ago, I would have terrible problems going into shops and talking. Just asking for something in a shop and people would turn around and say, "Oh, are you Shirley Stackhouse?" And of course you would have to say yes. And they would. It was always nice because they would say they liked listening to the program or they liked reading something that you'd written. And so it was a pleasant experience. But Peter Cundall has it much worse than I ever did. Because when he, in Tasmania, which is such a much smaller place, and people recognise him, of course, because of being so much on television, much more than I ever have been, and he says he's looking onto a shelf and somebody will come up to him and say, "Oh, what are you looking at?" And he says, "Oh, I was just looking at that tin of baked beans," or "What? Oh, you're going to buy that?" "Oh, I'll buy that too," they say. So whatever he's having, they're having too.
Oh dear. Did readers ever write into you about your books?
About my books? I suppose they have. I mean, years go past, I can't really remember. I suppose people have. They must have. That's not a very satisfactory answer, I'm afraid.
What about your the encyclopedia that you published most recently?
Oh yes, well I did that with I'll just go and get the book. This stupid order.
One thing I wanted to ask you about too was your work with the Friends of the Botanic Gardens.
Yes, I was right in the very beginning of starting the Friends of the Botanic Gardens, and we went to the first meetings and I was on the first committee, and I did that for some years, and then Jennifer became the executive officer, and she was did a wonderful job running the gardens in the Friends of the Botanic Gardens. So I did that for a few years, and then I thought somebody else should take over and do that. So that was something I was very, very interested in and thought was very important to get established for the Botanic Gardens. And I think it's been a tremendous help to the Botanic Gardens to have the Friends there. They raise a lot of money, and it's a great thing to belong to because the things they organise are really good, excellent.
They do have a nice
program.
Calendar. What about the Australian Garden History Society? You were also involved in that in the first days.
Yes, but I'm afraid when they had a big quarrel a few years ago and a big falling out, I just sort of thought, no, let them get on with it, so I gave them up.
And garden clubs, you also mentioned you don't join.
I don't join garden clubs. I always felt that if I belonged to a garden club, people would think that I was giving it some kind of priority or more advertisement or, you know. So I just thought it was just a good idea not to belong to Garden Pubs. It's the only thing I've ever belonged to, and that's in more recent years, I belong to Heritage Roses, which is not exactly a garden club. We just go and have big afternoon teas and talk about our roses.
Shirley, you've been recognised for your work in the gardening field. You were recognised most recently by the Queen with an OAM last year.
Yes, it was a wonderful honour. Yes, I was presented with my medal by the Governor, and she's most delightful lady, and said how much she enjoyed reading my columns and listening to me on the radio. So that was really nice. Yes, I was really thrilled.
And before that, you were the Australian Horticulturalist of the Year in 2004.
Right. Yes, it was a big honour as well, and they gave me a lovely thing. What do you call it?
A presentation.
A presentation.
Statue.
Statuette thing, yes. Yes.
And that was in recognition of outstanding and sustained contribution to Australian horticulture. Mm. Does that have more validity, more significance, rather, for you?
I think to have your peers acknowledging that you've been around for an awful long time and you've done an awful lot of work. I mean, when you think of writing a column every week for 30 years or something, a heck of a lot of commitment there.
It is. Mm. And of course you also received the Horticultural Media Association's Laurel Award.
That's right. Yes, I've got my laurel up in the dining room. Yes. And a lovely painting of hellebores which they presented me with from the Australian Institute of Horticulture.
You speak of great pride on your face as you say those things too.
Yes, it was lovely. Nice thing to happen.
Just as we wind up, Shirley, you've been very generous this morning. Is there anything that you haven't talked about that I haven't asked you about that you'd like on the tape?
Goodness, that's a surprising one. No, I hadn't really sort of thought of anything like that.
Well, you've talked about generally as we've gone along about the influences, but I wonder, looking back, is there one particular aspect of your life that's influenced you most?
Well, I think because I'm interested in gardening, and my sister is interested in gardening. My brother's interested in sailing. So I think if you look at my family, we must be mono something or otherists, where we're completely absorbed by one particular thing to the exclusion of a lot of others. And so we sort of concentrate on one thing. And I think if you concentrate on one thing and that's an important thing in your life, well, hopefully you're going to be good at doing it.
Will be done. Shirley, the influence on you is one thing, your family, but what about your influence on the community?
I think probably I've had an amazing influence that I'm not totally unaware of, because you don't go around thinking, oh, I'm having an influence on people. Mm-hmm. It's just something which happens without your being aware of it. But if you use a bit of common sense and think about it and think about the number of people who read what you write or listen to what you say, and you know that they're listening, you know that they're reading it, so they obviously are enjoying it. So you know that you're giving people pleasure and hopefully teaching them a little bit more about gardening.
Well, I think that's a lovely way to lovely spot to conclude on. Thank you very much for your time. Shirley, we've turned the tape back on because this lovely story about you, what you wanted to be when you were a child.
Yes, when I was a child, my relatives, of course, as relatives always do, were always asking me what I was going to do when I grew up. And I always used to say, even though I knew that they were going to laugh at me, I said I was going to be a writer and I was going to be an artist. And then they would all laugh. And my uncles, to make me say this, would give me a penny. So I used to think it was worth being laughed at by all the relatives around to get the penny, because a penny was a big amount of money in those days.
That's lovely. Thank you.